Hey everybody, this is Eric. Welcome to Teachers Talkin' Tech. I'm flying solo today. I had the chance to interview Dr. Monica Burns, who's been on the show a few times before, and just she's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to educational technology. She has a blog called ClassTechTips.com, which is a great resource for teachers. And she travels all over the country and really even the world doing professional development sessions for teachers, lots of different conferences that you can hear her speak at. I always learn so much when I talk to her. So I talked to her a little bit today about some of the trends she's seeing in educational technology and some of the things that she sees around the corner. You know, where are we going with educational technology? So I hope you enjoy this episode. Let's hear from Dr. Monica Burns. All right, I'm here with Monica Burns. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you've been on the show before, but just for maybe new listeners.
Absolutely. So I am a former New York City public school teacher. I've been out of the classroom for a few years, running my blog, ClassTechTips.com, hosting professional development for teachers in different parts of the country and a couple international spots, as well as writing about education technology.
Great. And I'd like to consider you a friend of the show because, you know, you come on here and I love having you on because I feel like you have a good feel for kind of the pulse of everything going on with educational technology. We're teachers, you know, I think that we're just kind of, you know, in the trenches, as they say, and sometimes it's hard to kind of get a good feel for what is going on.
Absolutely. Well, really excited to be back here, you know, to chat with you about some of the things that I've been seeing and noticing during my travels and my work with teachers and students, and all of that.
So what are some of the things you've been up to this year?
Well, this year's been really exciting. I've had the chance to speak at some favorite conferences that I've been to before and some new conferences and events that are new to my list this year. So it's been really fun to visit some familiar spots, but then also add some new events to my list the first half of this year. I also launched the Easy EdTech podcast earlier this year, which has been really fun, as well as a new membership site, the Easy EdTech Club, which has been really exciting this summer just to see folks really want to jump in and think a little bit about some big ideas that they're excited about as opposed to kind of all the things that are out there right at once to kind of take a little bit deeper dive. So I've been thinking about ways to make sure that my professional development this year has really been focused in on, yes, there are lists. Yes, we can go through 25 favorites of something, but now let's really take that and make a plan to run with that one or two things that you know are going to energize and elevate, you know, teaching and learning in your classroom.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I think that when I've kind of noticed when I go and do sessions for teachers and things like that, one of the things that I always hear from teachers is, you know, hey, we have so many tools. And learning about more tools, even if they can be great ones, can sometimes be overwhelming. And I try to tell people to think of it like curriculum, that, you know, your district might teach reading a little bit differently than a different district, but you're all kind of going toward the same goals. So it's okay to hear some new tools and not necessarily think you have to add them to your repertoire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that phrasing of it because I think it's so important for everyone to know that it's, you know, the strategy. And there's one example I always love to share with Today's Meet, which I'm sure you were familiar with in the past, the back channel tool. It just kind of went away, right? The company shut it down and there's this, oh no, what are we going to do? It's like, well, we can keep doing the thing that we were doing, but here's, you know, three other tools that we could do the same thing, right? So what's our best practice here? Why were we even using this in the first place? Let's not all freak out, right? You know, that understandable, oh no, this is going to be different, but let's just really embrace this as another reminder that it's not about the app, right? It's not about the tool, but it's really about what we're doing with this thing. And some tools just make it a little bit easier than others.
Yeah. The why, not the how. That's what I was looking for. So what are some trends that you have seen in the educational technology field this year?
Well, one thing that I've noticed, especially, you know, I was coming off of the ISTE conference and spending some time down on the conference floor, you know, it's been exciting to see the different ways that video is being used, whether it's with students to respond, and it's been neat to see Flipgrid's, a lot of their big announcements for the summertime that they made at ISTE, right? So seeing video from that sort of reflection side of things. I've done some work with the folks at Adobe Spark, so seeing some of the Spark video features, whether it's with some of the new collaborative items that are popping up, or different use cases for students as creators, it's been interesting to see some of this, the video component, I guess, has been the one that's been grabbing my attention this year.
And the video, you're saying, is a lot of student-led creativity? Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah. So, you know, there are so many great places to go to consume, right, video for kids. Yeah. You know, sometimes we think of YouTube as being a scary place, and it can be, just like anywhere, right? But if we are very purposeful with what types of videos students are watching or finding or we're curating, right? Lots of great things for consumption there from different content providers, at least on that platform. But with the students as creators, so kind of behind the camera, whether they're using their voice or they are using, you know, their kind of video to actually look and talk into the screen, there's just a lot that can happen. And I was actually leading programming at the Cooper Hewitt Museum here in New York City last week for elementary school students. And we had the group of like 9 to 11-year-olds all creating Spark videos. And it was just so interesting to see how everyone, you know, had a similar sort of task, you know, a little bit different spins on a design challenge. But, you know, the videos that they produced were all so different, right? They took such a different spin when they were in this kind of open-ended space for creation. And it was really exciting and just always great to see what, you know, kids are leaning towards as well as creators. And so, yeah, that video piece is one that I've been really excited about this year.
Yeah, and I feel like that's an area where teachers can really grab kids because, you know, knowing just my own son and how he consumes video, it's just such a difference from when I was younger and how I would learn new things or share new things. Kids really see video as a primary way to share what they know. And I feel like it's a way that you can, similar to writing, that every child might be writing about the same topic, but you see their personalities come through. Mm-hmm. And I think video can show that. I wish that teachers, with all the great tools that were out there, could really learn to just say, hey, it's not going to look like a produced video that's perfect. Just like their writing is going to have misspellings or, you know, or backwards letters or, you know, things that don't make sense. And that's okay. Just to be more about the using it as a way to share rather than, you know, worrying about it looking perfect.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, those are all such great important points and reminders, you know, when we're doing something like this with kids. And, you know, I have those moments of, do we want to re-record this, right? Or all those conversations right. I was having just last week leaning over these Surface tablets as the kiddos were working on their videos. You know, I think there's also this, you know, idea of, oh, I don't know how to do this perfectly, so there's no way I could teach someone how to do this perfectly, right? And so, you know, it was interesting to see, although I, of course, am super familiar with the tools that we were using last week, right? There's that problem solving, right? As soon as something, you know, maybe looked a little wonky in the web browser or someone's, you know, headphones weren't working just right, you know, the kids saw me go through and try a few things out, right, to make sure we were all set. And I think that's just important for them to understand that this is, you know, a troubleshooting, problem solving process all the time, no matter where we are, what tools we're using, what devices we're using. And it's just a really great opportunity to reinforce that as well.
All right. Any other trends that you're seeing in educational technology?
Well, this summer, I've also had the chance to spend some time, you know, taking a look at some virtual reality tools. Just maybe 2 weeks ago, I had a group come, so the founder of a company called Ovation, and he came to where I have some office space and showed off some of the work that they're doing within VR headsets. So this year, I've been really focused on virtual reality without a headset. So making sure anyone who's building confidence, doesn't have, you know, a huge amount of tools, maybe has a couple Chromebooks in their classroom, can do this, right, with VR. So it was really interesting to put on a headset and see what they have. They have tools that allow you to practice, you know, public speaking. So the idea is you might have a high school student who is going to do a pitch at a festival for something they've been working on all year, and they can put on this simulation and see what it's like to stand in front of a group and practice their speaking skill. So it was great because I think sometimes when we think of virtual reality in a classroom setting, we're saying like, oh, we're on a roller coaster talking about physics, yeah, or we're in the lion den at the, or the elephant sanctuary, or like whatever we're talking about for ecosystems or biomes. And so it was great to see this piece that's really about building confidence and capacity and independence. So that was one thing where, you know, I'm always on the lookout for this type of technology that I'm just drawn to organically, but then seeing how people are using it in ways that are different than might have been my first look at something.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one of the areas that it's so cool to see how everything evolves. Like these tools, like I know Seesaw is one of those ones where, you know, mm-hmm, where it started to where it is today was really driven by teachers and the ideas they came up with. And, you know, teachers are so great at coming up with new ways to use things and with hacks. And so that's just so cool to see those platforms changing. I know for myself, I was very proud of myself this year with VR. I used Google Expeditions, which, if you're not familiar with it, it's a platform where you can basically lead your students on an expedition. And so they basically follow the teacher on their device, and then you can show off different points of interest and things like that. Well, there's, and I can't think of the name of it, but I will maybe for a future podcast, there's a platform where you can actually make your own using Google Street View. And so I made a interactive like field trip in our town, and I was able to label parts of our downtown and overlay historical pictures over different buildings so they could see what it looked like, you know, 80 years ago or 100 years ago. And then I could lead them around on that. That was really cool to be able to do that. And really, it did not take me that long to put together. So
that's awesome. I mean, and I think that's really the next step with all of this, right, is going from that consumption to the creation here, whether, you know, I handed over little Insta 360 cameras to students. Before I have one, I handed that camera over so that students can get behind the lens, right, and film. Mm-hmm. And it's really, you know, I know flip cams aren't really around anymore with the little USB we used, yeah, to plug into the computer, but it was like the same size, the same idea, the same price point, right? Even though it looks fancier or might seem very different or flashy or new, it was really interesting to, when as soon as I was kind of handing it over to them, you know, I was said, oh, this is just like giving the flip cam to kids, right? Like, this is not scary. Just
right.
Do it.
To them, it's, yeah. So the Insta360, that allows you to basically take 360 degree video as you walk around. So like if you took a video in a museum as you walked around and talked, people watching the video could actually turn and see all around you. Is that the idea of that?
Yeah. So the Insta360 Nano, I'm just wanting to make sure I get the name just right. That's the one that I've used before. It plugs into your smartphone, or you can just plug it into, you don't need it to do that if you don't want to. You could just use a SIM. I think it's a, I'm trying to think what, oh, an SD card. That's okay. Not a SIM card, but like the SD card, just to capture it like you would in a digital camera. And so that's great. If you do it with your device, so I've always done it connected to my my phone. It's got like a lightning adapter for the iPhone, and it will save the footage into the app on your phone, and then you can kind of do it in anything you wanted right there. I've actually done, not recently, but I've done a flip Facebook live. Okay. This, so you can stream Facebook live right from it as well, which is pretty crazy.
That's awesome. I mean, you just think of the possibilities of you as a teacher taking kids to places that they would not be able to go. And really, I know that Facebook has some 3D or some 360 recordings and things like that you can go and check out. And I know Facebook, like you were saying, Facebook Live, it'll be nice when that becomes even more accessible for teachers to use other people's video and, you know, 360 video to really get a little deeper rather than just going to the aquarium or some of the ones that are out there right now, but being able to more easily find content that matches the curriculum. And you know it's coming. It's just, you know, it's not coming tomorrow necessarily, but hopefully soon.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just been really exciting to see what some of these options are.
So what are some struggles you're hearing from teachers, some struggles they're having still with, inside this field?
Well, you know, there's definitely issues around just making sure that everyone has access to something, right, and that it's being used consistently. So a lot of the educators or classroom teachers that I talk to, right, their frustrations or pain points is, you know, really just around access of making sure their Wi-Fi works, knowing that they have access to tools that are consistent, that are not going to go away the next year. So they're, you know, sourcing things that are typically free or freemium so that they can try it out and make a case when they're, you know, in their schools or talking to their admin or whoever might be making some purchasing decisions. And then when I'm talking to folks who are more kind of an instructional coaching level, who are supporting teachers in different spaces, I think it really just is that kind of consistency of saying, these are use cases, this is a high quality way to use technology, as opposed to we're just all typing in Google Docs, and isn't that great, right? You know, that could be a part of the puzzle, but how can we leverage some of the other components of some of these pieces? So I think that's definitely, you know, concern. I think when I talk to, you know, school leaders or making larger purchasing decisions, right, they still really have to take into account how someone's going to test on a device. And so that's really hard to have to prioritize in terms of your decision making when you're thinking about, you know, what your end goal really is beyond a test for students when they're using digital tools. So there's some of those kind of reality checks that I think, you know, educators, no matter what their level is or what their day-to-day looks like, you know, that's really what they're just trying to make sure that the implementation is, you know, high quality and consistent.
Yeah, I think I'm hearing from sessions that I do is that teachers are feeling like there is just not sometimes the infrastructure. Like they have the ideas, but then just implementing them can be tricky. And, you know, and that's something that I think that as we're all kind of the digital pioneers, that hopefully that will smooth out in the future. As, you know, you go to one school and a teacher has two Chromebooks, you go to another school, they have one-to-one iPads. I think that, you know, there's at least a little more consistency between devices now, where if you want to use a tool, it's like, you know, it's like, sorry, you have Chromebooks, you know, you can't use any of that. I'm not seeing as much of that anymore. But that consistency of here's a tool, we're going to support you, we're going to pay to continue PD, pay to continue getting new apps or whatever the case may be. That's always kind of been a concern, but it continues for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are some things you think are right around the corner here? What's the next kind of things to emerge, do you feel?
Well, you know, it's been interesting to see, and I typically, you know, like to do like a round around an expo hall. I feel like I get a good kind of sense of where ed tech companies are pushing people in one direction or what trends there are in those spaces, right? So, you know, I keep coming back to ISTE because that was one of my last big ones, right, for getting a feel for that side of things. So from that side, it's been interesting to see companies that are, you know, maybe a little bit larger scale, focusing more on accessibility, making sure that they're communicating their kind of privacy. And so those pieces, so taking into account, you know, does their tool support closed captioning, or are they able to really say, you know, where this data is being stored? So I think it's been great to see some higher level conversations about those pieces, right? When you are communicating with different ed tech companies, I think they're ready for those conversations, even smaller ones. So smaller ed tech companies that might just be a team of five people or less, right? So being able to have those quality conversations, I think is really important. One big piece of this is that I think that districts, as well as, you know, at the school level, and then of course at the state level, are a lot more thoughtful and in tune to saying we need to make sure we're using tools that are great for everyone, right? That are accessible and ready to use for every child and for every educator in their system. And they're also asking more questions about the privacy component as part of their vetting process. So I do think that this kind of direction we're going in is that there is more thought behind implementation of specific tools. And I think that you're going to see schools and districts in more of a power position for helping influence, right, what they need to have in order for something to work right for them. So, you know, that's one thing I really see when it comes to the space in terms of tools and resources. But I've also seen in sessions that I've led or conversations that I have, individual educators, right, at all levels are asking more questions and pushing more in a wonderful way about, right, are the images that kids are searching for in this tool, you know, copyrighted? Do they give them credit? Right? Are we allowed to use this? So they're thinking about those sort of media literacy skills. And it's been exciting to see conversations elevate a bit in both of these areas, I think is kind of the big trend that I'm trying to get at, right, with all the different places that I might, you know, interact with.
Well, that's good, because I feel like, you know, it's very exciting to live in the wild, wild west of, you know, of technology and education. I mean, teachers are just doing what they want to do and this and that. But yeah, I do feel like it's been around long enough and is used widely enough that we definitely have to think about some of those bigger issues. Like, you know, the privacy issue is going to become huge as students, you know, I'm looking at 7-year-olds in my classroom. And thinking in 11 years when they become adults, when their digital footprint has, you know, grown pretty large, how do we help them keep that safe and respect their privacy?
So absolutely right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Monica. It's always good to talk to you.
Really happy to have had a chance to chat with you today too.
Yeah, for sure. And I hope you have a wonderful summer. I'm so glad I'm able to do a few of these podcasts over the summer. Usually it's just like a total dead space, and then you feel like you have to just jump in with 2 feet in the fall. So it's nice to get some tidbits along the way and hear some things going on. So, well, thanks again, Monica, and we'll hope to hear from you soon. Oh, you know what? Before you go, make sure you plug again your podcast and some of the other things you have going on again, just so that our listeners can check it out.
Oh, great. Yeah. So this year I started the Easy EdTech podcast. So there's a couple dozen episodes. They're weekly. They go out on Tuesday mornings. It's been really fun to share in that format. You know, of course, on the blog, classtechtips.com, I'm always sharing lots of things, lots of favorites there too. And the podcast episodes are there as well as on iTunes and all those favorite places to listen. So that's been an area that it's been so exciting to share a little bit differently. And of course, I am on social at Class Tech Tips, whether I'm doing Instagram stories and updating with some favorite new tips or snapping pictures and sharing from special events. Sharing in that space has also been a new and fun thing for the past year or so.
Great. All right. Well, have a super rest of your summer, Monica.
Thanks. Yep, you too.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed and learned from Dr. Monica Burns just as much as I did. A few things before I let you go. Number one, I wanted to say thank you so much for listening to this show. I don't know if we say it enough, but we really do appreciate you, the listener. We don't make any money doing the show. We do it strictly out of the love of learning, and we appreciate all the feedback that we hear from our listeners. I know that this summer I've run into 2 listeners in real life, which has been amazing, and so has Mike. Marie is still bummed. She has never run into a listener in real life, but anyway, I'm sure it will come. But it's just so humbling when I hear feedback from people who listen to the show, so thank you so much. That brings me to number 2, which is if you have a chance and are willing, please consider leaving us a review, whether it just be stars or an actual written review. It helps the show get out there and so other educators can find it. So if you can take a minute to do that, it would be really, really appreciated. All right. Well, this is Eric Robinson signing up for Teachers Talking Tech. See ya.